So this next section will cover the formation of NHS supplies up until about 1997, when there were some significant changes. But before I leave the good old days of healthcare supplies North West, it's worth mentioning that the HCSA produced probably the finest conference that's ever occurred in the history of the organisation. It was at the Slieve Donard Hotel in Newcastle, County Down, Northern Ireland. And it was a fabulous occasion. We had Peter Brook, the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, as the guest of honour. We had Willie John McBride as the guest speaker. I remember distinctly before the dinner, a gunboat arrived off in the little bay there that faced the hotel, and soldiers appeared in the grounds of the hotel and in camouflage and hid round the gardens and the perimeter of the hotel. Security guys with dogs arrived and went through the hotel in all rooms. There were plainclothes security men mixing with us in the bar before the dinner, checking out where we were from and what we were up to, and so on. All done very, very discreetly. It was a couple all that with Guinness and oysters down by the coast. It was certainly one of the great conferences. And so it was that following the what I call the Kellogg Cornflake NAO report of the early 1990s, NHS supplies was born. I say Kellogg Cornflake report because in essence the NAO couldn't understand why it was that the NHS didn't pay the same price for a packet of cornflakes no matter where in the country the particular premises of the NHS were located. So of course this was deemed to be unacceptable, and NHS supplies was formed as a special health authority to essentially centralise NHS procurement and supply. As you might imagine, this was a position that was greeted with some scepticism, particularly within the health regions that had been making great progress with procurement and supply in the late 80s. So there had to be some winning of hearts and minds out there in the regions, and led by Ian Bradshaw, the then regional supplies officers made great strides in increasing the pay grades of what became known as divisional chief executives. And fortunately, that cascaded downwards through the staffing structures and at the centre and in the divisions. And it was quite obvious that NHS supplies was going to be the only game in town for anybody building a career. The urbane and very capable Terry Hunt was appointed chief executive of NHS Supplies Authority. And Terry brought in a senior team who, with the exception of Evan Sutherland, who was the national head of purchasing, had little or no experience of purchasing and supply. But they certainly knew how to run a health authority and how to deal with the Department of Health. Terry was offered central funding from the Department of Health, but very wisely chose to put NHS supplies on a self-funding basis and therefore stay clear of the DH budget and funding round, which of course can be altered, influenced, reduced, removed on the whim of the next junior minister or change of civil servant. And in any event, on-cost recovery through warehouses, contract overriders and purchasing service fees were already happening in some regions, and this was rolled out as the way the authority would do its business and fund the organisation. We quickly became familiar with the on-cost and margin issues and how you can turn an on-cost of, for example, 25% into a margin of 20%, because of course margin is expressed as a percentage of sell price. Also became familiar with growth and how you grow sales and the famous rule of 70. For example, if you have 5% growth a year, divide that by 70, your sales will double in 14 years. Work it out. But to digress, I think the removal of margin recovery and replacing it with a top slice funding arrangement with the current supply chain management arrangement will quickly backfire. As I said before, all it takes is a change of personnel at the department or at the cabinet office. And I have to say that post-COVID, I fear the worst. The fact is that the financial figure to run the supply chain management setup is just far too big a number on somebody's budget. So I've got no issues with procurement teams and purchasing organisations being self-funding within the service. But I do believe that caution's needed, that the generating of income can become all-consuming, and I think that can be to the detriment of core purchasing work. Procurement teams can change focus from getting the best possible deal to generating income. And couple that with a growing central organisation and it becomes a very, very big target, attracting an army of critics. And so it was on the 13th of January 1992, I received a letter from David Law, who'd been appointed chief executive of the Northwestern region, inviting me to apply for senior posts within divisional structures. I've got the letter here now before me. The address that NHS Supplies was using then was 14 Russell Square, which some of you might remember visiting. The Reading offices hadn't yet materialised. A quote from the letter: "All appointments will be approved by Terry Hunt before a job offer is made." Anyway, after the due process of interview, I obviously came up to the mark and I was appointed head of purchasing, I think that was the title, to the Northwest Division of NHS Supplies. Northwest Division comprised the old Northwestern region and Mersey region, and the task began of merging the two into one. It was a rationalising and reducing of post jobs. And in reality, looking back on it, it was a Mersey takeover. And that inevitably caused some resentment. And through the process, we lost some high quality purchasing managers and talented buyers that were displaced to the detriment of the service. I always remember Tim Wilkinson saying to me that he didn't think that the centre, i.e. the national team and the authority, would exert such control on the divisions. What true words those were. It's my opinion that the top team and the non-execs of NHS Supplies Authority didn't really grasp the vital contribution that purchasing and supply management, effective purchasing and supply management, can make to the NHS. And this wasn't helped, of course, when Evan Sutherland departed to join Unipart. On Evan's departure, David Law assumed the role of National Director of Purchasing, as well as continuing with his divisional chief executive role for North Western Region. I mentioned earlier that NHS Supplies Authority had become a large organisation. And of course, it became a target. And some of you might remember we had a tabloid expose. I'm not quite sure which paper it was now. The Sun probably comes to mind, you know, and one of the Freddie Star Ate My Hamster type of jobs. They called it Bundle in the Jundle. It was an expose of the lavish lifestyle of the publicly funded NHS Supplies Authority in its palatial Reading HQ with its atrium and plants and underground car park, which was full of BMWs, etc., 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 created quite a stir out in the wider NHS, I can tell you. On the 6th of June 1995, I received a letter from David Law introducing one of the fairly frequent restructures that occurred within the NHS Supplies Authority, and I was invited to apply for a role of Head of Purchasing. I was successful, along with Neil Argyle, and the Reading focus then of my time and career began to intensify. I think it's really fair to say that through the early to middle 90s, NHS Supplies struggled to find a direction. Great progress was made in product coding, for example, and the development of a national catalogue. Experiments were undertaken, some more successful than others, with product management, the appointment of product managers, much emphasis on marketing, and the development of purchasing strategy. But I think there remain tensions between the six divisions, or the six fiefdoms, as Nicholas Ward, the then chairman of NHS Supplies Authority, called them, and the national team. And my view was that in its dealings with the NHS, in general, things tended to gravitate to the lowest common denominator in a quest for one-size-fits-all solutions. And I think, unfortunately, this produced disenchantment and disengagement in many parts of the wider NHS. However, we continued to be well rewarded. I got to know Reading and its surrounding area very well, particularly the countryside of Oxfordshire, with its excellent hostelries, and they were very well used, I can tell you. So, we arrive in 1996, and the chairman, Nicholas Ward's inspired restructure that would complete the centralisation process by dissolving the divisions, which Nicholas had likened to six fiefdoms, as I mentioned before, and the creation of three central functions: purchasing, wholesaling, and customer services. The planning of this huge change was undertaken in great secrecy. And eventually, the national team, the divisional chief executives, and their various heads of function were summoned to Solihull, and very few, if any, knew what was coming. And so the NHS Supplies Morning of the Long Knives got underway. And after an anguished few hours, we departed Solihull, not knowing what, if any, our futures would be. The divisional chief executives were shell-shocked, as they could see their redundancy papers already written. Shortly afterwards, David Law succumbed to the chairman's will and left the organisation, and Eric Jackson was appointed CEO of purchasing and set about shaping and populating his new empire. I remember meeting Eric at the Chester offices, and he said in his inimitable style, "John, I don't have anything for you, but I know a man who does." And that's when I came into the orbit of Ian Bradshaw. The wholesaling division was to have its own procurement team, and Ian had an idea that I might head it up. I motored over to Alfreton and talked it through with Ian, and yes, that job was for me. Ian had a certain reputation, feared by many, loved by few, and I was certainly in the latter camp. I found Ian's drive, focus, and belief in what he was doing captivating. We just got on together, and years later, as his retirement neared, he was more a father figure to me than a boss. So on taking up the chief purchasing role for wholesaling division, I had two tasks. Firstly, to build a purchasing team, and secondly, setting about the transformation process that would lead to totally different relationships between the wholesaling division and its key suppliers. So I was given the opportunity, nay the privilege, of building my second team. And by second team, I only mean the second team that I ever had the opportunity to build. Not that it was inferior in any way, in fact, far, far from it. We were to base at Normanton, and I recruited Chris Theaker to head up Medital, an exceptional commitment from that guy, and a great public servant. Andrew Norton was heading up non-Medital. Andy can only be called a legend. His ideas just kept flowing. And the cast list: Liz Pearson, probably the best manager of suppliers ever employed by the NHS. Sue Pickup, understated and always focused, a formidable performer. Elaine Allsop, hardest working individual I ever worked with. Jonathan Burrell, Mr. Pessimism, but totally reliable and always delivered. The enigmatic Ian Parker, the Tony Curry of purchasing, easily bored but brilliant on his day. The erudite Patrick Fairlamb. Stuart Sly, completely honest and dependable. Sue Ord, suppliers underestimated Sue at their peril. Nigel Watson, Mr. Confidence from the Product Management School. And of course, Jason Lavery, the most capable of them all, a top-class strategist, as his subsequent career has demonstrated. We had a formidable supporting cast: Jill, Helen, Kim, Marie, Gareth, Peter, Fred, Graham. I know I'm sure to miss somebody out, so I'll stop there because it's not fair. The team that was that good, I likened it to an orchestra. We delivered focused category management, responsible for buy price, responsible for sell price, the excitement of the annual catalogue pricing meeting as senior buyers presented their model portfolio to be critiqued and signed off by Ian Bradshaw, Terry Watts, Glenn Harris and myself. I literally toured the country visiting the premises of the top 20 suppliers to the wholesaling division. My message was, let's rewrite the book and build proper relationships. I just didn't see how you could build a wholesaling business without support and close working with key health sector suppliers. It wasn't easy, of course, because the message I kept getting back was, why should we trust you? But with hard work from the team, we won that trust as the figures started to demonstrate. In 1997, the wholesaling division was turning over £597 million at a margin of 12.2%. There were 12 depots, and not all of them were using the same operating system. Maidstone pharmaceutical sales reduced turnover that year because they were being pulled out of the warehouse, and of course that increased margin. By 2000, turnover was £712 million, and margin reduced to 10.1%. Depots had been rationalised to 8. All were using the Rhesus operating system, and I believe they still are. So despite the disruptive depot rationalisation project, contrast that four-year period, the performance of the outsourced service that we now have. We didn't have the luxury of padding the numbers out with capital expenditure either. So after 2000, momentum that was created continued for a couple of years. Margin recovery hit 9%. Keep that figure in mind as we approach the outsourcing years, and I invite you to ponder how an efficient, cost-effective service function turned into the second most profitable logistics contract in Europe, at the taxpayer's expense, of course. And I never found out which was the most profitable. We created an effective data warehouse at the back of Rhesus that captured every transaction that went through the system. With the right investment, we could have delivered a joined-up demand management function to the NHS that would have been the envy of the healthcare supply systems the world over. Unfortunately, momentum was lost. PASA emerged and had to be formed, and then the outsource occurred. In my view, the data-rich warehouse has never been exploited. That didn't stop demand management gaining some traction. And in the comprehensive spending review of CSR07, we still had demand management opportunities of £150 million in 2008-09, £275 million in 2009-10, and forecast £400 million in 2010-11. But to my knowledge, little progress, if any, has been made in this field.